Everybody, and welcome back to Hot Mess Podcast. I know it has been a long time since I released our last episode. It's been almost, I think it's been a month since the last episode was released. And if I'm being completely honest, there has been so much that I could be discussing, but it has just felt very frivolous. I think for the first time in a long time, to be honest, I've just felt at a real loss for words to discuss the things that really matter to me. And I also think these are topics that matter to a much wider community. And I think anyone who listens to this podcast is probably in agreement with what we're about to discuss today and the importance of the conversation. I am going to be discussing violence against women. And I know that this topic can be triggering for a lot of people. And so I fully support switching off if you think this topic is one that you cannot listen to today. I think there's been so many conversations around it, especially in Australia recently. It can be very tiring. Sometimes it feels like we're screaming into the void. But I'm at a point where I've been tired and I've had enough. But I've gathered my thoughts and now we're here. To my male audience, I appreciate you for tuning in as often as you do. And I think this is an episode that you really do need to listen to, so please stick around. What made me decide that now is the correct time for me to be producing this episode is actually an experience I had last week. So if you follow me on social media, then you know that I go to dance classes where we dance quite sexy and it's mostly for confidence. I find that the place that I go for these classes is so uplifting and it's mostly women who attend these classes and everyone lifts each other up and it's super empowering and it's a really safe space for everyone to go and to 100% be able to express themselves. And last week when I was there, I noticed that as I was leaving, there was a real shift in the air about making sure everyone got home safe. And it's one of those classic things, like I think we've become accustomed to saying to each other, get home safe. But this time it really felt like people were really meaning it when they said it to each other. And it was just an interesting shift in energy from being like, yes, queen, like you look amazing and cheering each other on to the absolute like sincerity behind please get home safe. I think it was a really interesting moment to experience like feeling so confident in yourself and safe in your environment and empowered to then having to leave that space and being concerned for your safety and also for the safety of everyone else who you just spent the last hour with. Now, the studio I go to is only a couple of suburbs over from where I live. However, it's far enough for me to absolutely not want to be walking the distance, especially when it's dark outside. And so I ordered an Uber. And I thought it was very interesting that when I got into my Uber, the driver said to me, you're really not that far from where you live. And I was like, yeah, no, I know. And he said to me, it's crazy how many women I've picked up tonight who have also just been after very short rides. Like nobody's really been traveling far. It's just been a lot of women wanting to be driven short distances. And I was just like, duh. Like, I just was like, yeah, that makes sense. And he asked me why, which is crazy to me. I thought it was crazy to me that this man asked me why that was. I was like, use a bit of common sense, bud. But he genuinely did not understand. And at the time, I was exhausted. And I tried to articulate myself as best as I could in that situation and just say, it's dark outside. It doesn't really matter how far the distance is. I think a lot of women at this current point in time, given the state of our nation and the state of many other countries around the world, we would just feel safer to be able to pay for a service to take us home, even if it's a very short distance, rather than having to walk down dark alleyways or dark streets where we don't know people and be by ourselves, especially at nighttime. And to me, it's a given because this is the way I've been raised. And I just could not believe that this man who, although I'm paying for his service, although I'm paying for him to drive me even that short distance, could not comprehend why I would need that in the first place. And he went as far as asking me, what do I have as a cis, straight white woman? What do I have to be afraid of? And he's right. I come from a point of privilege in many ways. And although I tried to articulate myself as best as I could, I definitely didn't. So this is all the things that I wish I said to this man. At this current point in time, 1 in 3 women in Australia has experienced physical violence since the age of 15. Now, I don't want to act like Scott Morrison and have to ask you to picture the women in your life, but apparently it does help a lot of men who can't seem to comprehend this. So picture a woman in your life, whether it's your mother, your sister, your friends, or your daughters. And now imagine 1 out of every 3 of them enduring unimaginable pain of violence. This isn't just a statistic, it is the reality that so many women in Australia face. Over the years, we have been lucky. I hate to say lucky, but it feels like we're lucky in having to say this. There has been a downward trend in women being killed by their intimate partner in Australia. However, this year alone, we have seen a 30% increase in domestic violence and women being killed by their partners. And it's only May. And I can't help but question, how did we get here? Why did we get back to this point? Why do we still grapple with this epidemic of violence? And I think it's a very complex issue, and it's rooted in deep-seated societal norms of toxic masculinity and systemic failures, from domestic violence to sexual assault. The spectrum of violence against women is devastating. And as Australians, we need to confront the uncomfortable truth that our nation has a very serious problem, and it's not enough to be able to just turn a blind eye or offer hollow sympathy. We have to face this head on, which is why we continue fighting and why we continue rallying and protesting and raising our voices about this issue. And like I said before, I know it feels like we're screaming into the void because we've been raising our voices over this topic for years. And it's tiring. It's exhausting. I'm tired of having this conversation, but we have to keep going. And it's about finding our starting blocks. How can we create change? How can we better both men and women of the future? Because the patriarchy doesn't help anybody. So how can we dismantle this system that has been created within our society and create a better world for everyone? I have listed a few different ways that I think we as a nation could move forward in creating change. And my first point that I have listed is I think there needs to be a more robust education program that starts really early on teaching children about respect, consent, and gender equality. And it's not just about ticking boxes within curriculum, it's about shaping attitudes and behaviors for generations to come. Because you hear time and time again, I know that when I was growing up, there was so much conversation around like, oh, he's bullying you because he likes you and stuff like that. And I know it's definitely become a generational thing of different mindsets being passed down through different generations. And now we're recognizing that those old mindsets are toxic and are what is keeping our roots deep within the patriarchy and not creating any change. Because we have such an old-fashioned mindset, towards how children treat one another and levels of respect between boys and girls, even from as early as kindergarten age and stuff like that. We need to be able to start changing this early on and educating kids on consent and on respect and on equality, so that kids can grow up within a society where these are their core values. Just this week in Melbourne, there was a headline about a school in Ringwood called Yarra Valley Grammar School, where students had a spreadsheet leaked, some year 11 students. This spreadsheet included photographs of female students, and it was spread around the app Discord, and it was ranking the girls in the year level from the top as wifeys, cuties, mid, object, get out, and the last one being unrapeable. Now, I think we can all agree that this use of language coming from students is appalling and incredibly disturbing, that anyone would find it funny to call somebody rapeable or unrapeable in the first place. Really, truly atrocious. And I hate to say luckily, but it's been released today that two of the students involved have been expelled. Prior to today, there was students suspended, but no further reprimanding involved. And I think another big part of this conversation is the fact that although there were students suspended and expelled, this was apparently a group chat compiled of most of the boys within that year level. And I know it's fantastic that obviously one student came forward with this spreadsheet and said that this is not good enough. However, the fact that there were so many bystanders within this who probably also saw the spreadsheet and weren't willing to speak up about it contributes to our problem within society and within Australian society about men not standing up for the women in their lives and saying when certain behaviors within men and within boys starting from school age, expressing that their behavior is not good enough and that they need to change and that they need to do better. Now, unfortunately, this is also not the first time we've heard of something like this happening within schools in Australia. And I think a lot of our media focus on issues such as this has previously been within all boys schools or private schools. And as much as I agree that there are much larger issues within schools that are all boys because they are echo chambers of their own thoughts, there's also issues within our public schools. I know I went to a public school and there was a very similar problem circulating in my year level. And I know there has been in my other friends' schools and their upbringings, they've also experienced very similar things, which says to me that it's not just a class issue. It's not just for certain demographics. It's really across the board in how we are raising our sons. I also believe we really need to bolster our support services for women who are fleeing domestic violence, because all too often we hear about women facing barriers when seeking help, and that comes from, you know, inadequate funding for shelters or the lack of culturally sensitive services for women who are Indigenous or migrant women or even women who have disabilities. And so I think we need to have a more comprehensive support network that leaves absolutely no women behind. Now, you may have heard this week, Anthony Albanese has announced $925 million to help victims of violence leave abusive relationships. And this is also going towards a ban on deep fake pornography. And this is all in new measures for the Australian government to combat violence against women. And a part of this leaving violence payment is that $5,000 will be administered to a person leaving a domestically violent household. And it would meet the costs of leaving the relationship and any services or risk assessments and safety planning that comes along with that. Now, this program is actually formally known as the Escaping Violence Program and was implemented back in 2021 under Morrison government. So this funding that is going into it will actually not be starting for another 14 months. So my main concern is this too little too late? Because we have already had an increase of 30% of women in Australia being killed. And it's May. Like I said earlier, it's only May and it's already increased by 30%. And this program is not available until this time next year. And then on top of that, I think there are some flaws within this program in that survivors who are fleeing the household receive only $1,500 in cash, and the other $3,500 goes to goods and services for only up to 12 weeks. And I also think it's known fact that financial insecurity is closely linked to violence and what is preventing a lot of women from leaving violent relationships in the first place. And then on top of that, there's also the fact that the government has to be able to approve and establish eligibility for those leaving violent situations. And basically, for them to be able to establish eligibility, all applicants are required to have experienced a change in living arrangements as a result of intimate partner violence within the last 12 weeks, and they also have to be under financial stress in order to be eligible. Now, this program actually started rolling out in 2021, and it was trialed by over 45,000 participants, and it was due to end in January of this year. However, obviously, is now being extended as an interim measure until the government is able to provide a better service. And of the 45,000 people who participated since 2021, only 15% of victim survivors who accessed the program were able to receive the $5,000. And mind you, we are also in the midst of a cost of living crisis. $5,000 is not getting people very far, especially when only $1,500 is going cash in hand to the person who is a survivor of domestic violence. With that money, they need to be able to find a place to stay. They need to be able to have access to food and water and any other needs possible. The other $3,500, as I said earlier, is going to goods and services. So different departments that can help them escape violence, such as support workers and frontline workers. And those departments are also not being funded enough, which is causing extra issues. So now our concern is choosing between abuse or poverty. In my mind, $1,500 is not a long-term solution that meets safety needs of victim survivors. $1,500 isn't a long-term solution for anyone to live off, let alone somebody who was fleeing a very traumatic situation. So I really think that there is a lot of maladministration within this rolling out. And I really hope by the time that all of that funding goes into it in mid-2025, that there is a better solution. And again, in saying that, we still need to be able to have more funding for support services for women fleeing domestic violence, such as Berry Street, for instance, because of the 10 women killed in Australia within the past few weeks, 6 had already been in touch recently with Berry Street. And it's the age-old question of how could we not have helped them sooner? And it's simply because the programs that are out there in Australia have been proven to be able to save lives and to be able to help women. However, it is such a process to be able to get to that point within the first place. And it takes a lot of planning and a lot of time. And family violence and support workers need to be able to identify times when the woman's perpetrator is not present and when they can take precautions against the likelihood that she is being tracked. And frontline workers need to be able to speak to women safely so that they can build a safety plan. This takes weeks of preparation. It's not something that can happen overnight. And so the more funding that goes into these programs, the faster we can get women out of violent situations by connecting them with Centrelink or with maternal and child health stations, where family violence support workers are often stationed. We need to be able to have more people working within these companies who are able to provide the support, because the more demand there is, the more women fleeing domestic violence, the harder it is for these companies to also be able to keep up. Now, I personally think this is where I would like to see some of my tax going, because it was also just announced recently that Australia's defence budget is set to increase by $50 billion within the next decade. $50 billion. So as much as I agree that given the current state of the world, that defence is very important, I do not understand why our defence budget needs to be surpassing $100 billion within a decade's time. I'm sure some of that money can go towards what is currently one of Australia's biggest issues. In saying that, I also 100% believe that there should be more funding towards mental health within Australia and being able to provide it to wider communities and people who might not be able to as easily access it, especially in terms of domestic violence. It's no secret that some of the violence against women recently has been issued as mental health related or has been sprung from mental health issues. It's also no secret that within Australia, there is still a lot of stigma surrounding men seeking help for mental health issues and concerns. Why is that, you ask? The patriarchy. Because men are conditioned to suppress their emotions and to never show vulnerability or seek help when it's needed. Because vulnerability is deemed as a sign of weakness. And as a result, lots of men suffer with these issues quite silently, and they battle depression, anxiety, and many other mental health issues, and they don't have an outlet to seek help, and they don't know how to cope, and there is no support there. So what do? They act out violently, often towards their partners or other women within society, as we saw recently in Sydney. And because this all stems from the patriarchy, it's limiting men to a range of acceptable behaviors, and it stifles their freedom to express themselves, and it tells them that they cannot cry and that they can't show affection and that they have to align themselves with what is the societal expectation of what is masculine. Like the patriarchy, I'm telling you, the patriarchy doesn't help anybody. And this then leads into violence. Because the same toxic masculinity that glorifies dominance and aggression often manifests in harmful behaviors. And it's not just towards women, but it's also towards other men as well. From physical violence to bullying to the glorification of war, patriarchy breeds a culture of aggression that ultimately harms everybody. So where do we go from here? Because obviously the main focus of this so far has been on the government stepping up to help people fleeing violent situations. And so much of it is based on funding and support networks and availability and accessibility to people in those situations. I also think something that it will have to keep an eye on is also how the rest of the world goes about their activism in terms of women's rights. Especially with the 2024 US presidential election coming up, because a lot of their policies have regressed in the last couple of years, and the influence of the US leadership on a global discussion on women's rights can create the potential for more domestic activism and more policy shifts. And so I think it's really essential for Australians who value gender equality to remain vigilant and continue advocating for the protection and advancement of women's rights in Australia and also overseas. Also, when we've got so many international conflicts also occurring, we need to be looking at this at a global scale too. But it starts from in the house, and we cannot outsource our own resources without having fixed it internally. So we need to start here. So what I believe this nation will value the most and what is most important is a cultural shift. We need the men of Australia to stand up and say that enough is enough. We need them to be able to point out locker room talk, and they need to hold each other accountable for their actions. We need communities to rally together and reject the notion that violence against women is ever acceptable, because this is not just a women's issue, it is a human issue, and it demands collective action. We need to commit ourselves to a future where women in Australia feel safe, respected, and valued. It won't be easy, and it won't happen overnight, but we need to be able to build a society where violence against women is nothing but a distant memory. Thank you all so much for getting to the end of this episode. If you or someone you know is experiencing sexual abuse or family violence, please contact the National Sexual Assault Domestic Violence Counseling Service 24-hour helpline at 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732. Or the 24-hour emergency accommodation helpline on 1-800-800-588. There are many other services, including the Family Violence Crisis and Support Service on 1-800-608-122, Kids Helpline for young people aged 5 to 25 on 1-800-551-800, and please don't go at it alone. Please reach out by contacting Lifeline on 13 11 14. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Hot Mess Podcast. I promise I will be back on the mic more often. I feel like a weight has been lifted off my chest by going on this tirade. And to the man who is in that Uber, I hope you heard this. And so I hope you understand why I, as a woman, do have fears. And to all the women out there who listened, I hear you, I see you, I support you. You're not alone. The fight is not over, and we will keep fighting.